Welcome to our discussion on European banking supervision, the past 5 years and prospects for the future. I'm absolutely delighted to host today Daniel Nui. Daniel Nui, of course, needs no introduction, but nevertheless, let me say, of course, that she is the chair of the Single Supervisory Mechanism, the first chair of the Single Supervisory Mechanism, so Europe's new endeavor, not so new anymore, after 5 years, of centrally supervising banks in the Eurozone. Since I think you just told me it's your last trip in this position, in your position to Brussels, since it's your last trip to Brussels, you are the outgoing chair, I think it's a good moment for us to spend a bit of time discussing with you, looking back at the last 5 years, perhaps making an assessment, making an evaluation of where we stand after 5 years. But of course, also looking forward to the next 5 years, perhaps to what your successor has in front of him, and so to take stock and to really evaluate what the supervision will be up in the future. Perhaps a third issue that we want to focus on is institutional questions. As we all know, banking union is incomplete, and perhaps you will also have some time to share with us your thinking on where do you see the biggest gaps and how does that actually interact with your work as being the banking supervisor. But perhaps we start by looking back, perhaps I just start with a very general question. When you look back at the last 5 years, and of course you've been also there when the whole thing was set up, and you hired, I think, 1,000 employees more or less in a very short period of time. So if you look back at those 5 years, what have been the main operational but also political challenges of that position?
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. And as a matter of fact, it's not exactly my last trip to Brussels. It was my last Econ hearing in the Parliament, yes. But I will be back to Brussels before the end of this week for another meeting with other people. So Brussels is an important city that I visit quite often. Yes, well, looking back to the first months and years of the European Banking Supervision, we started as a very small startup. Beginning of January 2014, I had two secretaries, a counselor, and secretary of the supervisory board. And to have more people, it took 1 month to have the four DGs, and so on and so forth. So for, the 10 months before taking over supervision, indeed, we recruited about 1,000 people, including the people in the support services, IT, statistics, HR, that would help us. And we also conducted the comprehensive assessment of the banks we would be supervising starting on November 2014. And that was, both tasks, in fact, were quite challenging. But thanks to the powerful incubator, we were able to deliver on time. And in particular, the comprehensive assessment was a huge health check of 130 banking groups comprised of 1,200 banks. That we didn't know at all, and we had to conduct that with people we had not worked with before, the supervisors in the NCAs. So it was very much a startup ambiance and a lot of work, but was very, very useful.
There was a possibility in the legislative framework to take over supervision 6 months later if we were not ready, but obviously it was not an option for any of us. Nobody was ready to postpone by 6 months. We wanted to be ready on time. Then we had also in parallel to create the manual for supervision, taking the best supervisory practices wherever they were, looking at Europe first, but also beyond Europe. If there are some good supervisory practices elsewhere, we want the best for Europe and we are ready to adopt it. The beauty of this principle to build on the best supervisory practices is that it automatically improves the situation, the quality of banking supervision. And it is also very good for team building because nobody did everything right. Everybody could do things better, take some good practice elsewhere. And everybody, as a result, felt respected and contributing to the building of the new institution, and that was very, very helpful. From the beginning, we wanted to be tough and fair, or fair and tough. The order does not matter, but the two go together. In order to be tough, you have to be very fair. Toughness is accepted if it is fair, if it's the same toughness for all the banks. So this is the environment in which we started, and it was very rewarding after a certain time to see the new institution taking form.
Okay, so you very much talked now about the sort of the initial operational challenges, and of course you mentioned that you had a good incubator. Of course, the ECB. Having the ECB as a startup support is probably not a bad place to start a nice small operation from. But can you say a little bit more about sort of what were the main sort of substantive challenges beyond on the operational side, not on the operational side, but on the actual supervisory side? So you came in, the banking system was still considered by many as very fragile. Yeah. There was huge political expectations that you would very quickly sort of clean up Europe's ailing banking system. Many were talking about a Japanification of Europe's banks. So perhaps you can tell us a little bit more on sort of the content, I mean, on the supervisory challenges at the beginning.
We were starting our work just after a crisis when the banks were indeed fragile for many of them, and banking system had to improve their situations. But at the same time, it means as well that regulation was being changed. We were given new regulation, new tools, the CRD4, CRR. We were equipped as well with a crisis management framework, with the single resolution mechanism starting soon after ourselves. On the health check, the comprehensive assessment was very helpful to know where the main weaknesses were and where pressure should be put on banks to improve the situation. And in fact, we identify from the very beginning the weak banks. Then we put pressure on them to do the right thing, to comply with supervisory expectations. Sometimes they resisted, and they were compromising their future in this case. It's not the job of the supervisors to save all the banks. And if certain banks that have been identified as weak are resisting the request from the supervisors, they will have a difficult time, and sometimes they may even disappear. So it was certainly a challenging work. One element that was also a difficulty was the too fragmented regulatory framework. We have these national options on discretion, more than 160 in CRR and CRD4. That's a lot, really. We spend a lot of time at least harmonizing them within the SSM, exercising these national options in a similar fashion. But there are still some that exist that are in the hands of the national legislators, so we cannot do anything. We also harmonized a very powerful tool, which is the SREP, the Supervisory Review and Evaluation Process, the Pillar 2 in another word, which were very different depending on the countries. We launched certain projects that were needed, like the revalidation of the models that are used by the banks to calculate their capital requirement. They calculate the risk-weighted assets, and hence they calculate the capital requirement, a big project as well, requiring broadly 100 supervisors in the banks during 3 years only for this project to go through the models. What else? Well, we did a lot to improve governance. It was the first time in the European legislation that we had the good legislation for governance, the international regulation for governance. So Europe was lagging behind a little bit compared with the other regions of the world. We had work to do to make sure that this new governance regulation was properly implemented. And that's very important. Good governance means good risk management, checks and balance in the banks, better decision-making process in the banks. So that has helped a lot. And of course, sooner than later, we started thinking about how to address NPLs. We had this mountain of non-performing exposures. We had about 1 trillion when we started non-performing exposure in the balance sheet of the banks. Now we have 650 billion, which is still a lot, but all the instruments are in place now, and the amount is decreasing quite fast. Almost every day we see banks that are taking new steps to improve the situation, and that came with a little bit of resistance that you could have noticed. It was not such an easy thing. You mentioned political pressure. Well, we felt the pressure, to be honest, on this folder. But being a European institution, it's much more easy to do what we have to do, namely identify the weaknesses in the banks and address these weaknesses, make sure that the banks address these weaknesses. So that was done as well. I don't know whether I forgot something that you have in mind, but please tell me.
Can I push you a little bit more on sort of 2 points you made? One is some banks sort of resisted when you told them need to get your act together. Can you say a little bit more about this? Perhaps not about the banks individually, but more about, was it more a phenomenon you, as the new kid on the block, you had to establish yourself, and they were still used to work with the national supervisors and were sort of still in a mode of going through the national supervisors? Or was it more sort of the usual resistance to that you would have encountered also in your previous experience as a French banking supervisor?
Well, I start by using the comparison with the French. I was not accustomed to this resistance in my French experience, to be honest, because we had a big crisis in the 90s in France. You may remember the issues about Crédit Lyonnais and other French banks. So the risk appetite of the French banks had significantly decreased. And in fact, I was accustomed to have bankers that were discussing expectation of supervisors, sometimes quite loudly, but at the end of the day were complying with the expectations right. of the supervisors, because they knew that maybe we were a little bit too tough, but we were equally tough, and that it was needed. In fact, it was done for the best of the bank and the best of European citizens. So I was, in fact, not accustomed to this resistance. It was not a resistance because we were the new kid on the block, not at all. No. It was, in my view, because they were accustomed to resist and they were accustomed to be successful. And all of a sudden, they were... finding people that were resisting, saying, well, no, we have heard you, but still you have to do this or that because we believe that it is needed to address your weaknesses. So we repeated once, twice, on most of the bank discovered, okay, the world had changed, supervision had changed, maybe it was because of the crisis, which was largely the case, because we would not have been recruited and the banking union would not have been started without the crisis, probably. But most of the banks, after some time on certain explanations, complied with the expectations of the supervisors. Certain resisted. Their fate was compromised by this resistance, but they discovered it a bit late for certain of them.
So what you're describing is really a story of also different supervisory cultures that
yes.
we've seen, where resistance in some countries was paying off and others not. And all of a sudden we moved to a system where it doesn't pay off no matter.
Yeah. Yes, it was a again, the French supervisors were not smarter than the rest of the supervisors. It was just that we had a tough crisis, we had learned the lesson, and we were doing very tough supervision indeed. I came with this culture. I believe in tough, rigorous supervision. And for that, you have to be fair, develop level playing field, explain everything, and treat everybody the same fashion, which is what we have been doing. And it's probably because we were credible in this that without national bias that we have been able to largely implement this new culture. And nothing is forever. We are young institutions. Right. People matter. We have to make sure that it's going on. And let me say as well that I did not do that alone. Sure. I had next to me a very good colleague, Sabine Lottenschlager, which has exactly the same views as myself. We need tough and fair supervision. We did that together, and the people that we had been recruited were really an excellent team. The competition was incredible. We had between 300 and 400 candidates for the first 10 positions for DGs and deputy DGs. So you see what the competition was.
Right.
So we were able to recruit the best possible people coming from the 28 countries of Europe, because you needed to have a European passport. And these people were coming to change supervision and to do a good job and to make the bank safer and sounder.
So some commentators took the view that the SSM was moving too slowly on some of the Italian banking issues, including the NPL issues that you just mentioned. What would you reply?
Well, What I would say is that we had identified the weak banks from day one, for sure. If you remember, it was public, the results of the comprehensive assessment. And then, again, certain banks did what they had to do to improve their situation, and others did not. You have a different fate if you work hard to improve your situation and if you don't. That's the conclusion. I don't think, but you can always do things differently and better and faster. I think we did what we could do with the tools we had. We were facing resistance. It's not as if everybody was telling us, go faster, please. I think I am satisfied with what we have been doing. We see the benefits again every day. Banks that take new plans to further reduce, go beyond the even the expectations of the supervisors on the plan they had agreed with us. Because when you start being virtuous, you like virtue, really. You are happy to see that your situation is improving, your funding is costing you less, you are making less the headlines of the newspapers for your weaknesses, and so on and so forth. There are rewards, really, when you start this way towards the journey towards more virtue. And it's good, you mentioned the Italian banks. I'm very happy that a lot of progress have been made. They are very needed for the time being. And I hope, I would be very sad, really, if the progress made, the achievements of the banks to improve their situation would be consumed right now, would disappear because of the crisis. Anyway, they are certainly much better off with the situation that exists now than before.
Can you say a word of how your work was made complicated by the fact that the single resolution board was still in build-up and the resolution framework, even now it's still in flux. I mean, just yesterday there was still a discussion in the Eurogroup on liquidity provisioning in banking resolution or after banking resolution. So how does, you know, this still, I have to say, somewhat incomplete setup of banking union affect your work as a central supervisor? I mean, have you been able to do all the things that you would like to do as a supervisor? I mean, including on questions such as the ring fencing of capital and liquidity across borders. So as it's a broad question, but perhaps you can give us a little bit more of a sense of how the SSM is operating in this environment of incomplete banking union.
Well, regarding the single resolution board, I would say, so far, the current situation has not prevented myself or Elke Koenig, the SSM or the SRB, to do what they had to do. For example, when we had to declare failing or likely to fail a bank in Latvia, we knew before that we were starting a journey that would end up in the limbo somewhere, because we had fully understood that there was obviously the SRB would consider that we were right to declare failing or likely to fail. There was no discussion about the situation. And then the question for the SRB is that, is it of public interest to resolve a bank? Or it's, if it's not in public interest, the bank has to be liquidated according to the national liquidation framework. Obviously, a small bank doing business largely with non-resident customers was not exactly a customer for resolution. It was not of public interest to resolve the bank. But then we knew that we would transfer the folder on the bank to countries that had transposed the BRRD in such a fashion that liquidation was not obvious and it did not take place, as a matter of fact, which I can understand because the BRRD is not, for the time being, precise enough on the fact that it has to be liquidated in the national liquidation framework. All the words that are needed are not there, in my view, and in the view of the lawyers of the ECB. So for national judges that receive the judge in charge of liquidation procedure, they receive a folder from Brussels, the single resolution mechanism. They look at their national criteria for liquidating a bank. Too bad, failing or likely to fail by the SSM and the SRB are not on the list. So something has to be done, but it cannot be the liquidation that has been foreseen by the BRRD. So we could have been in a kind of panic. Oh my God, what do we do? We went on and did what we had to do. And so it has not stopped us from acting. This is what I want to say regarding the SRB. Obviously, the fact that we do not have EDIS and also the testimony of solidarity that is constituted by the funding, the European funding of the Single Resolution Fund, is preventing certain developments to take place. You mentioned ring fencing. Yes, a number of countries put in place ring fencing during the crisis, and it is still there, and it will not disappear before there is a European solidarity on the Single Resolution Fund on EDIS. I don't like it, but I understand the situation. Consolidation of, you mentioned the waivers on the liquidity, for example, on maybe large exposures. It's true that without European solidarity, national legislators that are the only ones that can authorize the large exposure waivers that are in their hands or the solvency waivers that are not on the table anywhere for the time being will not do it before there is a single jurisdiction in Europe. The 19 countries of the euro area are considered a single resolution, a single jurisdiction. We have the possibility to give a waiver for liquidity arrangements between the groups in the groups which are in the euro area, but it's useless because pretty fast there is a large exposure limit that will hit the waiver for liquidity. The groups will be able to give a drop of water. So why ask an exemption for this waiver, an authorization for this waiver to be able to give a drop of water? That's not useful. So indeed, there are certain European developments that are locked until we have a complete banking union. I don't like it, but I understand it.
Well, perhaps let's spend a few more minutes on the future before opening up to questions and answers. So please, if you have questions, start already preparing your questions and signal it to me. But perhaps let's spend a little bit before I open to the floor on the future. I mean, so I guess what many would like to know is, of course, your first of all, what is your assessment of the current health of European banking system? And how do you see also the European banking system evolving going forward? I mean, there is, of course, a significant discussion on the low profitability in of Europe's banks, Europe's stocks, the stock prices of European banks have fallen very significantly this year. And I think there is, of course, a big question whether we shouldn't see more consolidation in the banking sector. And I think many of us have expected this consolidation to happen much more quickly once we have a single supervisor, once we have started this journey of banking union. Yet, so far, bank mergers and so on haven't really increased, and they certainly haven't increased in terms of cross-border bank mergers. And so perhaps you can give us a little bit more of a sense of where do you see the sector going also? How do you judge the sector currently? How healthy is it really against the backdrop of the stock prices falling so much? And where do you see the sector going in Europe? I mean, are we about at the moment where we will see a wave of consolidations? And if so, would you welcome it as a supervisor?
Well, a lot of good points and good questions. Well, I think the situation of the European banking system has significantly improved. We have CET1 capital ratios, the best quality capital, which are around 14% right now, coming from about 12 2 years ago, and 11 in 2015, beginning of the full year of SSM supervision. NPLs, I mentioned, have significantly diminished, and that's going on. The momentum is there. The profitability is the weak element, obviously. The return on equity is around 7%. Obviously, it is low because of non-performing exposures. And, non-performing exposures means non-performing, no income, but also losses that are taken now to clean the balance sheet. That's why the CET1 ratio has been around 14% for some time, really, because the banks now use the buffers they have, the solvency buffer, to clean further their balance sheet, which, in my view, is very good. How is the situation evolving? Well, first of all, as you say, we have this profitability issue, which is important. We still have a lot of non-performing exposure, so the momentum has to continue. I am also concerned by the fact that certain actors, maybe legislators, feel that, well, we can almost declare victory and start some deregulation, which I totally disagree. I think the legislator took reasonably tough regulation. It was absolutely needed, and we certainly should not reduce the rigor of the regulation and the supervision. We also see the period as a dangerous period of time because the NPLs, for example, the credit risk, they are not taken during the crisis. There is no appetite to take risk during a crisis. They are not taken just after a crisis. But if I remember well, we are 22 quarters of growth in the euro area. So that's exactly the period of time when you start taking more risk, when in particular you have ship on abandoned funding also. So we have to be very cautious regarding credit risk for the time being. We see that leverage finance is developing much, that the covenants are sometimes more lax than they were a few years before. So we will be very vigilant on the credit risk. One of our priorities for next year is to go in depth in the credit underwriting criteria, because this is where everything happens, the credit underwriting criteria. Then once the bad loans or the future bad loans have been put in the balance sheet, it's more complicated. So no reason no room for complacency. We have to stay very serious and rigorous on regulation and supervision. Regarding the profitability of the banks, there are different reasons. Again, if it is less profitability because the banks are taking care of their legacy assets, I think that's a good signal. They will be more profitable afterwards. If it's because there is an excess of offer of banking services, which is the case in a certain number of countries and banking systems, that's a bit more worrisome. Also taking into account that there are other tough competitors, fintechs, for example, could take a part of the incomes of the banks. And if this is happening, that's not good news, obviously.
But is that happening? Is fintech already a serious issue in Europe? I mean, Amazon and other players, I mean, are they entering into increasingly into the banking space where...
Not yet, but they could in the future. On payment services, for example, already they are more active. It's not already banking services, but...
And the level of regulation, there's a level playing field or not between banks and...
Well, if they... If there are banks, there are fintech banks, they have to comply also with the banking regulation, so it's level playing field. If they are not banks, they are not obliged to comply with the banking regulation. So by doing only part of what makes a bank, they may avoid to be regulated. We follow that carefully, what is taking place, to make sure that there is no improper use of the definition of a bank, what is a bank, what is not a bank. Anyway, there are a number of operations that can be done without a banking license and for which they will compete with banks. Regarding consolidation, why we do not see yet consolidation? Well, first of all, because the risk appetite of the banks has been reduced by the crisis. Before the crisis, a lot of banks that were not very successful and very profitable in their own countries started consolidating with Eastern Europe banks, for example, sometimes buying them at high prices. After the crisis, banks have learned the lessons. They are more cautious. What we discussed before, ring-fencing, fragmentation of the regulatory framework that does not permit to take the benefits of a single jurisdiction is making it less rewarding. There is also the fact that now there is a framework that is addressing the global SIFIs or the domestic SIFIs as well, the SIFIs, the systemic institutions. And these systemic institutions to be a systemic institution, the size is extremely important. For me, too important, because it's not the only factor. Complexity would be an interesting factor as well. Interconnections on this kind of elements, capacity to be resolved on quality of recovery plans, and so on and so forth. But for the time being, because it's the simplest criteria, the criteria of size plays a big risk. So if the banks are getting bigger and as a consequence have additional CET1 requirements, additional liquidity requirements, additional leverage ratio requirements because they are bigger, before turning even bigger, they will make sure it's worth the effort. So all those elements are playing a role. I'm sure that sooner than later there will be some consolidation. For the time being, it's seen as more easy to have domestic synergy mergers of synergies, producing synergies. Well, I have no preference personally. Supervisors should not be the ones deciding what is a good merger. I think the bankers, the investors, right. The market participants should be the one deciding what is a good merger. But the role of the supervisors is a very important one because mergers can be the best or the worst thing. We have to consider the operations that is submitted to us for authorization. To challenge the business model, to challenge the execution capacity of the banks that are willing to merge, identify the possible weaknesses, ask the bank to mitigate these weaknesses. It might be that we ask more cleaning of the balance sheet before the merger because there is a possibility to have a good equity story to say it's for a merger, we will clean the balance sheet, we have a brilliant future ahead of us, so join the adventure and put equity on the table. That can be a good equity story. So we can use that to have the banks cleaning their balance sheet. We may ask additional equity. We may put conditions regarding improvement of the IT capacity to work together for the two. Whatever, all kinds of conditions that are needed to reduce the weaknesses that we have identified, if there are some in a merger. So that's an important role, and we have to be strong in what we require, because once we have given the authorization of a merger, if it doesn't work, we are the owner of the problem, and we will be blamed, rightfully so, for the problems.
Okay, I think we have exceeded our time. Please join me in thanking you for the wonderful discussion and the frankness of your intervention. Thank you.